I hope the little outline is circulating, and you see what it says on the top there. It says, the real story of Christianity. That implies that there's a false story. And I want to share with you to start with what's going on in our culture today. We've all been bamboozled. There are these stories that are out circulating, and they're gaining steam of Christianity and the real what they claim is the true story of Christianity for 2,000 years. And unfortunately, it's infecting a lot of people. So I want to give you an example at the start of what I'm talking about, and then we're going to look at three areas and really look at the true story of Christianity. So here's one example. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, President Obama went to a prayer breakfast, and this is a quote. He was talking about problems in the Middle East. And he said, lest we get on our high horse and think this is unique to some other place, remember that during the Crusades and the Inquisition, people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ. And that was all he said about it. And he left the feeling, which a lot of people share, is that the Crusades were an awful a blot on Christianity's record. And we're going to come back to that a little bit later. And then, of course, he threw in the Inquisition as well. So that's one story that goes around that people are picking up on. Let me share a second story with you. Any of you seen the Cosmos series that's been on PBS? Okay, this is the old Carl Sagan series that's kind of been redone for the 21st century, hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson. The very first episode, they didn't take long to get to where their feelings were. The very first episode, they had they switched to kind of a cartoon look, and it was a story of a man named Giordano Bruno, who really lived back in the early 1600s. He was a friar, and he came up with this idea that maybe the universe was bigger than people thought. And he went around Europe proclaiming this. So Neil deGrasse Tyson, they switched to him. He's the narrator of this series. It's supposed to be a science series, keep that in mind. And so he's walking around the Vatican, and he says there was no freedom of thought in Italy at the time. Quote, well, of course, you know who was running things in the 1600s. It was the church. So obviously he's making an attack there. And so poor Bruno is, according to the series Cosmos, he's going around proclaiming this view of the universe. He's harassed by the church. Eventually he's in prison, and he's put to death, which really did happen. He was put to death. But the way that the series is proclaiming the story is that this man was put to death because of his scientific beliefs. He was a martyr for science. And later on, Catholic authorities in it are depicted as cartoon. Remember, it is a cartoon, but they're kind of drawn out, and they look like ghouls. Sharon and I watched it, and I'm going, oh my heavens. So they make these people look terrible, who are the Catholic officials, and they bring in like scary music anytime they show these Catholic authorities. And at the end, Tyson says that the church's method of operating was to, quote, investigate and torment anyone who voiced views different from theirs. So do you see what's being set up there? There's science and there's religion. In this case, Christianity. Christianity is trying to stomp on science. But thank goodness there were the few voices that spoke out. So there's the second story that we're getting. Here's the third example. I went online. I was just curious to see what I could find. I went on to some atheist websites, and I typed in missionaries to see what they would say. What's the story that's going around about missionaries? And I bet you know where we're going with this one. This is from an atheist website. The Christian missionary mindset is generally depicted as that of simple religious folk with a pure desire to peacefully spread their gospel and message of love. In reality, their methods of propagation are often anything but peaceful and usually leave behind a native population stripped of their culture and often decimated. Missionaries often intermix military campaigns with missionary campaigns in their fervor to civilize the heathens, who are often simple, happy natives whose only crime is that they're not Christians. So you hear the third message here? Here's another story, that all of this work by these missionaries is actually terrible for the natives. The natives are fine. It's an idyllic Eden. They're living this wonderful life. Missionaries come in, lay guilt on them, split families up, do all this terrible stuff to them. So there are three stories that we're hearing. And those are not the only stories. I want to focus on them today, but there are other stories. Christianity demeans women. Christianity never liked democracy. Christianity is against education. Christianity in a power move back in the 3rd or 4th century slammed some gospels, got rid of them, and had other gospels, right? That's the Dan Brown story from the Da Vinci Code. So all these stories are out there that's so frustrating because they're not true or they're only partially true. And so that's what I would like to look at today, which is I just call it the real story of Christianity. So here we go. Now we're on to point one. The Crusades. If you have a chance, and I know life is fast-paced, but there's a terrific author, Rodney Stark is his name. He's a historian. He's a very careful historian. He has page after page at the back here of his notes. And again and again, he contradicts and he gives a different story than what a lot of historians have given you. He's got this one called God's Battalions. And he takes a look at the Crusades. This whole book is just on the Crusades. And boy, is it an eye-opener. So the story being sent out to the world right now by those who don't believe is that the war was a hostile move on the part of Christians, that they went in to the Holy Land. There were these Muslims that had this wonderful civilization. They were so far advanced. And here came the barbarians, and they came in and they stomped on everything. It was an offensive war by the West. There were power-mad popes in charge at the time, that it was a way to start colonialism, to go into the land and suck the land of all of its riches and send it all back to Europe. And that Muslims ever since then have had this burning hatred of the West because of the Crusades. Have you heard that story? I mean, that story circulates. That's the popular story of today. We're not even supposed to use the word Crusades anymore, right? So we can't talk about things as a crusade. What's the true story? Was it really the poor Muslims just living a peaceful, happy life there, and then here came the Christians with an offensive role? Not exactly. I'm going to give you just a few pieces out of this book, but there are many, many more, but just because of time. Early in the 8th century, by the way, this is the time when the Holy Land had been taken over by the Muslims, and so Christians who wanted to go to Jerusalem and worship there were pilgrims, right? They would come in, and they're at the mercy, obviously, of the Muslims who are in charge. Well, in early in the 8th century, 70 Christian pilgrims were put to death. What was their crime? Pilgrims. That's all they were. Later on, 60 pilgrims were crucified in Jerusalem. So they're bringing back this barbaric method of death. Late in the 8th century, monks were attacked, churches were destroyed. They burned to death monks in another location. In 923, on Palm Sunday, a new wave of atrocities broke out, churches destroyed, people fleeing, people put to death. Around the year 1000, somebody ordered the burning or confiscation of all Christian churches in the Holy Land. And the best estimate, just a guess, but the best estimate is 30,000 churches burned or pillaged. 30,000. And this is just part of the picture. So what's going on? The real war was being done by the Muslims against the Christians. It was a defensive attempt to go in and protect. All right, so that's the first thing to think about. There was no plan, by the way, for these early Christians to go in. There was no plan to convert the Muslims. That was not their purpose. They were, if they wanted to be Muslims, they could stay Muslims. It was not a moneymaker. The families that sent the Crusaders off knew it was going to cost them a fortune. They knew that ahead of time. And when the Crusaders went in and actually set up some of their little kingdoms there, it was a money loser. They were having to be supported. There were huge subsidies coming from Europe to keep these places going. There was no colonialism. There was nothing being taken out that was of value. How did the Muslims do under the Christians? Surprisingly enough, they did really well. Their taxes were lower than when the Muslims had run the Muslims. That's kind of interesting. Muslims were let alone. They were not forced converted. They were left alone. I had another note on that. I wanted to make sure I get it right here. The land was not confiscated, right? Their land was theirs to have. So it was a much different picture than we get today. And by the way, Muslims do not harbor hatred. It's not been part of their tradition. That was just dredged up recently as an excuse for some of the things going on. Okay, so there's one view, right? So look at the Crusades. How about the second comment? All right, the second thing that I read to you dealt with science. Poor Bruno, the Dark Ages. Have you heard that reference?
Yeah.
There was the Roman Empire, and it fell, and then for 1,000 years, or however many years, it was the Dark Ages. Capitalized D, capitalized A. You find it in a lot of textbooks still. And then finally, science and the Enlightenment threw off the church's clutches, and finally science broke forth, and now we're living in a rational world. Thank goodness we got rid of the church. That's the story that's out there. But what's the truth behind that story? Well, here's where I want you to interact with me a little bit. Christianity is responsible for science. They're not antagonists. They're not opponents. It's not a clash. It was early science that blossomed because of Christianity. So I want you to think about that for a minute. What do we believe about the nature of God? What do we believe about the nature of people? And what do we believe about the nature of this world that would lead people to think that science was good and lead scientists to go out and explore the world? Any ideas?
Yeah, the image of God as a creator God. And so in us is the ability to create, to explore, to understand, and to rationalize in the truest sense.
Yeah, we are made in the image of God. We share some qualities of God. We're not animals. Mm-hmm. And we have curiosity, and we have creativity,
dignity.
And we're rational, right? And so we can go out and begin to look at this world. And how did God make this world? How is it described in Genesis? It's good. It's a good world. It's nothing to fear. It's nothing to worry about. Is God the same thing as the world? Is he part of this world? If you cut a tree down, have you cut God down?
No.
God is separate from the creation, so then it's all right. If you want to go catch a fish and look at the fish, you want to catch an animal, look at the animal, you're not hurting God. So it's a different view of God. This is a rational God. Think about some of the other gods that you've read about, the Greek gods. Were they rational? They're like a little bunch of kids, right, running around throwing curses at each other. It's just chaos, like the Three Stooges on steroids, right? And the Hindu gods, I mean, all these gods are chaotic gods. Allah changes his mind, right? The God of Islam, you're never sure exactly what you're going to get with him. But our God is a rational God that, like an artist, he created or he painted this world. And so there's confidence, there's a good feeling that you can go out and explore this world. So science didn't come about despite Christianity, it came about because of Christianity. And this is not just a Christian position. I've read enough material on this because I love science. Non-believers agree, right? It does come out of Christianity. I have kind of an interesting back and forth. I teach out of Palomar College. And so I said something like this one time in a letter that I wrote to the newspaper. And so a guy in the science department contacted me and he said, "No, that didn't happen." So I started giving him chapter and verse, you know, some text that he would recognize, and then I didn't hear back from him. So, I mean, this is honest to goodness truth here. It came out of Christianity. Well, what about the Dark Ages? Was it really a dark age? Answer, one word, no. What happened during the Dark Ages, by the way, honest historians today are saying get rid of that term. Right? And so it's going to start disappearing, but it's still in people's minds, right? It was the Dark Ages. First you had the Roman Empire, and they were very logical because they took Greek ideas, and then they fell, and you had this dark period, right? And then 1400, 1500, here comes the Renaissance. Oh, finally life, and we can understand the world. Not true at all. Not true at all. Let me give you just a quick rundown. There's more than this. It was during the Middle Ages that the plow, crop rotation, iron tools, blast furnaces, windmills, water wheels, all these things were invented. And medicines. And so the story is now that these so-called Dark Ages, just call them Middle Ages, that was actually the foundation for modern science. Right? Modern science didn't just leap out all of a sudden with nothing behind it. The Middle Ages was the supporting point and got it going. So don't think of Dark Ages anymore. What about Galileo, right? I didn't mention Galileo before. What's the story about Galileo? What do you think of? What's the stereotype picture?
Stargazer.
But as far as dealings with the church?
Mm. Broke off. A lot of the literature says he broke off from the church.
Okay, some people are saying that, you know, once he saw what the universe was like, he backed off from his Christianity. What happened to him with the church? There's the big trial, right? He was put on trial and he was tortured and all these terrible things happened to him. Well, the true story is complicated, right? So we don't have time to get into a ton of details on that. But he was really opposing Aristotle. He was not opposing Christianity. He never ducked his Christianity. He was a Christian his whole life. He was opposed to how Aristotle's philosophy decided how the world ran. The church had bought into Aristotle, and so did a whole bunch of leading thinkers of the time. Galileo was the kind of guy that stepped on a lot of toes. I mean, it was just his method of operation. They would ask him to do one thing, he'd do something else. He puts out this document that has the Pope. The Pope's comments come across in the voice of a character he calls Simplicio, which means stupid simpleton. Well, that's not a good way to get along with the church, right? When you call the Pope an idiot. And he got himself in a lot, he did. He got himself in some trouble. And they put him on trial. Well, they just checked on his views and all, and they said house arrest, that was it. He was never tortured, he was never in prison. He lived a very comfortable life. So there's a little element of truth, but not to the extent that they would exaggerate. And it certainly was not a case of him looking at Christianity and saying, I don't want this, I need to be a scientist. He thought there was no problem putting the two together. But what about Giordano Bruno? Right? Cosmos is this television show, and it's supported, it's on PBS, right? It must be true. What a cynical bunch of you are.
PBS and truth.
Well, here's the true story about Giordano Bruno. Yes, he lived. Yes, he got put to death. Are we saying that's a good thing? No, absolutely not. I don't want you to think that I'm trying to brush that off. It was awful that the church put him to death. But you know why he got put to death? He was a heretic. He was a heretic. It was not for his Christian beliefs. If it was, there were other people at that time who believed the same thing and had spoken out. They were not ever persecuted. They were not put in prison. Nothing bad happened to them. So it was not the science that got him in trouble. It was his set of beliefs. You want to hear a few? Here are some of his beliefs. Tell me, during this time period, especially when you have the Reformation going on and now the Catholic Church feels a little threatened, and you've got one of your own saying things like this. He suggested Satan was destined to be saved and redeemed by God. He didn't think Jesus was the Son of God. He called him a, quote, unusually skilled magician.
Oh, wow.
He publicly disputed Mary's virginity. He spoke up against the Catholic Church, spoke up against its ministers. He held a different view of the Eucharist. He believed in reincarnation. And he thought souls would migrate into brood animals. That's called transmigration of souls. He dealt in magic and divination. So you think maybe this guy could have gotten himself into trouble for some of those things? You bet. I went to a couple websites just to see if it was just my view, to see if it's only a Christian perspective. So I looked again, make sure these were atheistic websites. They were unanimously embarrassed by the Cosmos episode. More than one time they said, come on guys, you know, tell your story of science, but don't lie. Don't make this stuff up. And this one website said this, why would a science program, talking about Cosmos, why would a science program devote 25% of its first episode to the persecution of someone who is not a scientist, was not accepted by scientists, and published no science, but was instead a martyr for magic?
Well,
so there it is. He's a martyr for magic. Is that bad? Yes. I mean, the church shouldn't have done that, obviously. But the story that's out there, he was a martyr for science. No, no, no. He was a martyr because of philosophical and religious beliefs, but that never came up in the Cosmos series. The church was angry at him because he's suggesting something different scientifically. He's a scientific martyr. No, no, he wasn't. What else was going on as far as Christianity goes and science? Are they really at loggerheads and fighting? Absolutely not. During the Reformation, have you heard of the Royal Society in England? It's their premier scientific society. Newton came out of that, and Halley with his comet and all that kind of stuff. The Royal Society was founded by Puritans. Christians. Christians started it. There's a long list. I don't have time to go through a lot of them here, but many of the early scientists were Christians. They were definite Christians, not sort of. They were strong Christians. Here's just a small list. Mendel, when it comes to genetics. Vesalius in anatomy. Kepler, in astronomy. Newton, in physics. Descartes, math. You can go down the list. The biggest names you've ever heard of were definitely Christian people. And it goes back to some of the things we were just talking about, how they viewed the universe. In fact, I think it was Kepler who said when he did his math and when he looked out at the universe, you know, he's the one that figured out the planets went around in ellipsis rather than a circular orbit. He said, I'm just thinking God's thoughts after him. Elliptical orbits. So he says, I'm just thinking God's thoughts after him. So to hear the connection there, he felt very comfortable as a Christian to look at the world. And how about today? Well, maybe today, is Christianity drawing away from science? Is there less scientific reason to believe in Christianity? Absolutely not. Let's take one episode or one aspect. 75 years ago or so, wow, I guess 100 years ago, okay. They start discovering the universe looks like it's expanding. You heard of Hubble? Back in the early 1900s. So Hubble sees this universe expanding. Well, if it's expanding, if you could run the clock backward, right, and you get down to nothing, right? And then somebody was kidding around with it, didn't really like the theory. He called it the Big Bang Theory, and it's stuck, right? So we hear about the Big Bang. So 99.9% of scientists believe in the Big Bang today. Does that hurt Christianity?
No.
Isn't that an outworking of Genesis?
Yeah.
And in fact, it is so powerful. There was a scientist at the time, his name was Eddington, he was a physicist, very well known. He said, the idea of a beginning to the universe is repugnant to me. And scientists fought tooth and claw against the idea of a Big Bang because they knew what was going on there. If there's a Big Bang, there's got to be a Big Banger.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how do you get the universe? It can't create itself, so something outside of space, outside of time, outside of this material world, outside of matter and energy, something outside of that has to bring it all into existence.
Yeah.
Right? You can't have the universe create itself. That's an impossibility. So it was not there, and now it's here. So how's that explained? Well, it's explained pretty well in Genesis.
Yeah. Let there be light, bang.
What's that?
Let there be light, bang.
Let there be light, exactly. And that's exactly what they say. It was light. You know,
the problem is that's an unacceptable premise with the most scientific world. That is, your axiomatic statement is unacceptable to them.
Well, but they're buying
it. They just buy it. Okay, it just happened. They don't want to have a creator. They wanted to deny the creator.
Well, you've heard of Stephen Hawking. He worked like crazy just 3 or 4 years ago with a book called The Grand Design to try to suggest there is a way that you can get a universe from nothing. And his final conclusion was, it's the laws of gravity. Has the law of addition, let's say, you ever put any more money in your bank account? Right, you can work all the numbers you want on a piece of paper, but you got to have the bills that go into the bank, right? I mean, So even people that like Stephen Hawking were a little embarrassed by this book. He's all of a sudden become a philosopher. He's not a philosopher, he's a scientist. You ought to stick to the science. He says philosophy is dead. Of course, that's a philosophical statement, right?
Yeah.
So talk about a self-inflicted wound, you know? It's like, so anyway, so we're in pretty firm ground right there with the Big Bang. Well, what have they discovered since the Big Bang idea? They've discovered the universe has all these variables. In other words, all the things that make the universe work, all the laws and stuff, are so finely tuned. It's like having a whole wall full of dials, and they all have to be dialed just right so we can get life here on Earth. That sounds like the Bible, right? And they're having a hard time dealing with that. At one time, there were only two or three of these things. Now they've got literally hundreds of them. I'll give you two or three real quick examples. The way the universe is expanding has to be just right. If it goes too fast, flying apart, you don't get galaxies, you don't get stars, you don't get planets, you don't get us. If it expands too slowly, it goes and you got a gob. You don't get anything, you just get a clump. And so the universe has to expand exactly right. And guess what? It's doing it. It's expanding just right. How about the size of the Earth? If it's any bigger, it pulls down atmospheric gases that would poison us. If it's any smaller, the oxygen and the good gases that we want here go away. We have to have the right kind of sun. The Earth has to tilt just right. We got to have big planets on the outside that protect us from comets and stuff that come in. We got to be in the right spot in the galaxy. We got to have the right kind of galaxy. The atomic weight, all that kind of stuff. There are pages of this stuff. I've done this talk just talking about that, and I'll just bring in pages and I'll say, you want me to go through these? And people go, no. But there are hundreds of these things, right? That's called the fine-tuning argument for the existence of God. Sound like London all of a sudden. Time warp. We ended up in London. How about DNA? What have they found in the last 50 years when they've looked at DNA? Is it simple or complicated? Leading question, right? It's hugely complicated. Bill Gates said it's the most complicated computer code ever. Hey, I trust Bill Gates. He's talking computer code. Now think about that. If you've got computer code in you, don't you need programmers to create computer code?
That's right.
Yeah. So, again, this, all I'm doing for this part is just trying to suggest science and Christianity have not parted ways. They're not going off in two different directions. We don't have a gosh, wouldn't it be nice kind of faith. This is a faith that's it's trust in what they're actually discovering today. I love looking through the newspapers or going online and saying, I wonder what the next thing is going to be that they find.
Yeah.
And the stuff they find tends to weaken evolution. It tends to strengthen the idea of special creation. It tends to strengthen the idea that this universe and everything about it is unique.
Yes.
You know, there's a guy about 2 years ago, and this is in Air and Space magazine. It's not a Christian magazine. It's put out by the Smithsonian. This guy is a really well-known astrophysicist, and he writes books. He's very popular. He's not some goofball. And they gave a review of his book. And you know what he said in that book, part of the book? He said, after examining the things that are going on in the world of science, he says, I think we're it in the whole universe. Now, up until then, you had people like Sagan, Carl Sagan, and others who were saying, oh, life is everywhere. It's so easy to get life started. You just turn around, you know, life starts here, starts there. Planets, we got gazillions of planets. It's easy for it to happen. Not after all these things they've been looking at and how particular things have to be. This guy, who's not a Christian, says, we're it. Now, maybe they'll find something. Who knows? NASA's working like crazy on Mars. Which is fine. I love that stuff myself, but so far nothing, right? And it suggests this is a pretty complicated setup we got going right here, which sounds like it's all planned. So is science and Christianity splitting? No, I don't think so. How about the third area that I want to look at and spend a couple of minutes on? What's the story about missionaries? Well, I already told you, the missionaries come in, they abuse and ruin a perfectly good culture. I don't know if you've heard of Barbara Kingsolver, but she's a pretty well-known novelist. She wrote a book called The Poisonwood Bible. You like the title? You know where we're going with that. She wrote a book called Poisonwood Bible, and in this story, she's got a missionary and his family that go off to the Congo in the 1950s. He is terrible. He's arrogant. He looks down on these people. He's abusive to his own family. That's her view, right? That's what missionaries do. They hurt themselves and their families, and they go and they screw up a perfectly good situation someplace else. One quick story. I found this online. A Christian who was in college said he talked to a friend, a non-Christian, said, hey, I'm interested in going on the mission fields. And this guy, kind of flared up, and he said, don't do that. He said, missionaries destroy cultures. And he said that wasn't the only time he heard that. Every time he talked to non-Christians, that's the story going around, right? That they destroy cultures. Is that true?
No.
Oh, no. Emmanuel Faith, thank goodness. This is a real missionary-oriented church. I want to share a story or two with you. Bruchko, you recognize that? He came to Emmanuel Faith. His name is Bruce Olson. He came to Emmanuel Faith a long time ago. I don't know if you can still access a talk that he gave, but he's a powerful speaker. He went down to South America to live with what were called the Motolone Indians. And he just went off in the boonies by himself, way out in the middle of nowhere, very little support. And as he began to work with these people, he improved the crops. They had been just kind of throwing stuff and just kind of hoping it came up. They had no real way of secure crops coming in every year. He changed that. He got them into cattle so that they could raise cattle. He set up health clinics. The people were getting their homes cleaned up. The little kids weren't dying like they'd been dying. And so he made a huge improvement in the community. And he won over a convert named Bobby. So I want to share that with you so you know what I'm talking about here. The story, of course, is that, gee, Christians screw up cultures that are perfectly happy. Oh, no. And here's the story that really hit me in toward the end of the book here. Bruce is dealing, he's got the one convert, remember, everybody else is still in their pagan beliefs. So the chief of the village, who's not a Christian yet, he says, I have to go talk in the jungle with the tiger because danger is coming. And Bruce Olson says, what? He says, you wouldn't understand. And the chief leaves, and he comes back later in the day, and he looks just terrible. He's really distraught, and his shoulders are slumped over, and the villagers gather around anxiously. And Bruce wants to know what's going on, and this is what the chief says. The tiger says that the spirits will come out of the rocks tonight. They will attack our home. Lives will be snuffed out. Languages will cease. There will be death. And the chief just walks off, and the people just spread out, and they go and they lie in their hammocks. They have hammocks there. So Bruce goes to ask Bobby, what's going on here? Bobby says, The spirits come out of the rocks. They try to kill. Sometimes only one dies. Sometimes many die. In a nearby village, 2 months ago, 7 died. How do they die? I ask. What kills them? The spirits kill them, Birch go. They die in their hammocks because the evil spirits tear their language away from them. Bobby, does somebody always die? He says, always. So as the evening comes, the people are getting more and more frantic. The men are up in these hammocks. They're swaying. They're doing incantations to their gods. The women are down banging rocks together. Everybody's got their eyes closed. It's just utter misery. This is not a happy group. These are not idyllic people, right? They fear this so much that somebody's going to die that night. So Bruchko wants to know what Bobby is doing. And he sees Bobby, and he starts walking toward him. He hears Bobby chanting, and he thinks, oh, no. He's doing what the villagers are doing. He's kind of lost his Christianity. But as he got closer, this is what he heard coming out of Bobby's mouth. Jesus is in my mouth. I have a new speech. Jesus is in my mouth. No one can take him from me. I speak Jesus' words. I walk in Jesus' steps. I'm a Jesus boy. He has filled my stomach, and I'm no longer hungry. And so as Bruce got around to see Bobby, Bobby looked at him and had no fear on his face whatsoever. And Bruce realized, this is what I need to be doing too. And so he sang that song with that new convert all night. When dawn came, no one had died. It was the first time in anyone's memories that the spirits had walked and no one had died. So that was the village before, right? Full of fear, full of worry about the ancestors or whatever, or in this case, evil spirits, and actually having things inflicted on them by these spirits. This is not anything that they shouldn't have worried about. They needed to worry about them. And so Bruchko comes along and sees a whole different thing because of his Christianity. Now, is that just an isolated case? No. I want to end with this one last story here. This is a man named Matthew Paris, P-A-R-R-I-S. You can look him up if you want sometime and read the whole article. But he's got an article, great title to it, still talking about these missionaries. As an atheist, I truly believe Africa needs God. Isn't that wild? An atheist said that. He says, I've become convinced of the enormous contribution that Christian evangelism makes in Africa. Education and training alone will not do. In Africa, Christianity changes people's hearts. It brings a spiritual transformation. The rebirth is real. The change is good.
Wow.
And he says he went into big cities and he worked with a lot of Africans right alongside of him. He said there's always something different about African Christians. He said they would look you in the eye. He said they seemed optimistic. They were curious. He said the Africans that had not the Christian background, he said they were beaten down. They were just totally listless. They wouldn't look people in the face. They had no hope. And he says, this is what's going on over there. And at the end, I thought this is one of the best endings of this. I'm just going to read it to you. Those who want Africa to walk tall amidst 21st century global competition must not kid themselves that providing the material means or even the know-how will make the change. A whole belief system has to be supplanted. He says, removing Christian evangelism from the African equation may leave the continent at the mercy of a malign fusion of Nike, the witch doctor, the mobile phone, and the machete.
He just doesn't want them here.
Yeah.
He doesn't want the missionaries here.
So listen to those four things, right? If you don't have Christianity, you end up with Nike. So there's going to be this bombardment of ads, right? So there's going to be commercialism, the witch doctor, right? There's going to be that pagan belief system, the mobile phone. High tech will come, but the machete will follow, right? The death and destruction are going to come too. It's the missionaries that protected people from things like this. It was the missionaries that stood between the government, in some cases, or business concerns that were rapacious and trying to come in and take the land. It was the missionaries that blocked that. It was the missionaries that got rid of some awful things that were going on, cannibalism and sati, when the women would be killed after their husbands died. They were the ones that fought slavery. So the record is so different than what we're being told. So I guess in summary, just... We have a great story, and we're not telling it, or the world isn't buying it, but we got to get that story out there. So I hope you consider doing that. I gave you a few resources at the bottom of the page. I think probably the best one out of them all is Under the Influence. It's a pretty hefty-sized book, but it covers these and a whole lot of other areas and what Christians have done for the world, the positive good that's come out of Christianity. So we've got a 2,000-year-old good record. Is it perfect? No, absolutely not, because we're all humans, and we all fail. But overall, it's a tremendous record. Some of the others you might like, one is by D. James Kennedy, What If Jesus Had Never Been Born? That's a little easier reading, a little simpler, shorter book and all, but it's good. It's good as well.